San Diego Mayor Bob Filner is in day three of his two-week psychological rehab program for allegedly sexually harassing multiple women. Many of us go through sexual harassment prevention training provided by our employers, but this is different. What's involved in this kind of rehab? Robert Weiss, clinical social worker and founding director of the Sexual Recovery Institute, joins us to talk about it. Thank you very much, Mr. Weiss, for being with us.
I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad you got to nominate me as a councilman. I appreciate that.
People go into psychological rehab to try to change sexually destructive behaviors, affairs, obsessions with pornography come to mind. Do many people seek treatment for being a sexual harasser?
Well, the person who's involved in sexual harassment has to seek some form of treatment if they want to continue their position or any kind of position. They're going to run into this situation. It is a repetitive pattern of behavior, as we were hearing about with this gentleman. It's not something that happens once. It happens multiple times, and that means there's something not right about that person's thinking, and treatment is indicated.
And so you do see a lot of people who seek treatment for this particular issue?
We see people who act out in the workplace in all kinds of ways, and I see people who are sexual. For instance, we'll see physicians who are sexual with a patient, or clergy who are sexual with someone in their parish or their congregation, or someone in the workplace who is trying to push an agenda of being sexual with multiple employees. So, yeah, it's not unusual at all for someone to abuse a position of power in that way.
Now, is it even clear that Mayor Filner has a compulsion to do this? He seemingly never had a negative consequence to it before. We have no reports
right.
He'd ever been confronted. So might it be, even without therapy, that he'd never do this again because now he's suffered such a negative consequence?
Well, I think you'd have to look to Anthony Weiner for that. You know, when I look at the Anthony Weiner story in New York, and the big blow-up about him was, well, how could he possibly have continued his behavior despite having had consequences, and yet he continued to do that phone sexting for a period of time after he lost his position in Congress? And people say, well, God, you know, the guy's pretty bright. Why wouldn't he stop? And what I know about compulsive behaviors or addictive patterns of behavior is consequences aren't necessarily the thing that stops someone. It's treatment that helps stop someone.
Can you describe what this kind of a two-week therapy program might entail for Mayor Filner?
Well, I've not met the mayor. I can't speak to what he's going to be involved with, but I can tell you what treatment for compulsive and addictive sexual behaviors is like, and even when they border on offending behavior, which is more this kind of behavior. There are really three stages to treatment. It's really not that hard to talk about. And the first thing is confronting denial. I mean, someone who's engaged in this kind of behavior obviously has a way of thinking that allows them to make it okay. And if you can make problem behavior okay once, you can make it okay over and over again. So part of our job, really the first stage of treatment, is to confront what is it about your thinking that allowed you to go ahead with this behavior that anybody else would logically say is not very good. And not only to do it once, but to do it multiple times. And so we will in detail go through with someone with these kinds of issues, every situation, every sexual encounter, every romantic encounter. You'll really go through their history and look at their thinking in each situation and try to confront and challenge and begin to break down the ways they have been able to deny that they do this kind of thing.
Would typically group therapy be a part of this, where you'd have other men who might have struggled with this same thing as a part of the feedback process?
Yeah, in behavioral health treatment, and that's what we're talking about, behavioral health, whether it's addiction or other kinds of behavioral acting out. In behavioral health treatment, group therapy is always recommended because you've got that other guy or gal, depending on the situation in the group, who, you know, knows what that other person's been up to because they've been up to it too, and they can confront and they can challenge that person's thinking. It's always better to be working in a group.
If you have questions or comments about the two-week treatment program that San Diego Mayor Bob Filner is undergoing for what's alleged to be serial sexual harassment, we're at 866-893-KPECC, 866-893-5722, or the AirTalk page, kpecc.org. Robert Weiss is clinical social worker and founding director of the Sexual Recovery Institute. If conduct like this is an outgrowth of a narcissistic personality where someone can't really empathize with someone else, the other person is typically objectified, how do you treat that, particularly for someone, in this case, who's 70 years old?
Well, I think that treatment is not something that happens in 2 weeks. Treatment is something that happens over time. We open the door. You know, you asked what treatment is. We are confronting denial. We're helping this person look at how they made these decisions. We're helping them, if they get to that point, really grieve that how much they screwed up their lives and the lives of other people, if we can get them to look at it that clearly. And then we're trying to teach them some form of, if you will, relapse prevention, so that when they have an attractive person in their office or someone asks them to lunch, or that they know what their triggers are and they know how to make better decisions. It's never going to go, the desire to do it is not going to go away, but their actions can be different based on learning different ways of acting.
And so, I mean, it sounds like it's really behaviorally related, looking at triggers, changing behavior. Is it necessary for someone, if they have not historically thought of the other person's feelings in this,
yes,
to become an empathizer?
Well, empathy is a late stage of development for anyone who acts out sexually, especially an offender. And I want to qualify the word offender, because most of the people we work with in the Sexual Recovery Institute, and we've been there since 1995, and we've been doing the dedicated sexual disorders work for quite a long time. Most of the men and women we work with are involved in consensual behavior. So, you know, they may be seeing prostitutes, they may be looking at porn, they may be having affairs, they're doing whatever they're doing, but the partner that they're partnering with is in agreement that it's okay to do it. And when you are partnering with someone who's not in agreement to a sexual act, you're pushing them to it, or you have power over them, or they're too drunk or too young or whatever it is, when you don't have consent, it's more of an offending behavior, which actually requires a higher level of confrontation.
All right. We're talking with Robert Weiss. Our phone line's open for you at 866-893-KPCC or the Air Talk page at kpcc.org. What are the biggest barriers through this process to people being able to change their behavior?
Well, I think the biggest barriers to someone who has a compulsive or an addictive sexual behavior problem is their belief that somehow they can figure it out or handle it or get around it without having to change their lives. People who have these kinds of vulnerabilities, whether it's the inability to have empathy for how their behavior affects someone, or they're sexually acting out in some way to cope or manage with things that they don't know how to cope or manage with, they need to change their lives. They need to reduce stress. They need to take the conflictual or negative situations in their life that may be kind of provoking or triggering this behavior out of their lives. And a lot of people in positions of power don't want to move away from the control, the power, and the authority that they're given, but oftentimes they have to in order to heal. So it's kind of a double-edged sword.
I'm wondering also, you mentioned part of this process is confronting the behavior, admitting to it. But here you've got a lawsuit that's been filed, and I think the deposition's coming up Friday. So, I mean, is that something where if the mayor is able to admit to something privately, that he might not be able to do that publicly for legal reasons, and could that be a barrier to recovery?
Well, I am not a legal expert, so I can't say how talking about things in therapy could affect someone's legal case, but there are many ways of talking about things that are indirect but necessary, but also explain what the person is acknowledging. You know, they can do it without names, they can do it without dates, but they can do it. And also, you know, therapy is a pretty high bar to bring a therapist into court and ask them to break confidentiality in a legal case. It doesn't happen that often. And especially in these kinds of cases where addiction, where we truly are a mental health clinic and we're dealing with mental health issues and we're licensed people, we're very, very cautious about, you know, the court would have to force our hand, and that just doesn't happen that often. So, but I did want to get back to the thing you said about empathy, because I thought that was really important. You know, I always wondered before I became a clinician, I'm currently a therapist, you know, why would the guy who was beaten as a kid hit his kids? You know, that wouldn't make sense to me. I mean, if I was hit as a kid, I would think, my God, I would never want my kids to go through what I went through, and I would never hit my kids. And yet, we most often find that the person who's abusive to a spouse or to their children, they themselves were abused when they were younger. And the reality is what treatment is, and it's not that dissimilar from what we're doing here, is in order to build empathy for the person that you're harming, you have to have empathy for what happened to you. Part of the treatment process is having the person, you know, we're not going to say to this person, you're a bad person. We're going to say, you made some really bad choices, man. How did you figure out that those were good choices to make? And what was your upbringing like? And what did you learn about being a man? What did you learn about treating women? What did you learn growing up that was so misguided in the ways that you were treated and you were educated and you were brought up that you could have reached these conclusions? And in that way, we look at people as having a problem, not being a problem. And if they can begin to have empathy for what they experienced in their life and what has brought them to this point, then they can begin to have empathy for the people that they harm. But that's a long-term proposition.
I mean, and could part of this be for a person in power? They just feel like sort of the rules of behavior don't apply to them. I know Filner's attorney had said, well, there was never sexual harassment training provided by the city, but it would seem hard to believe that he doesn't know how people typically behave with each other. But could it just be he feels like, hey, I'm so charismatic, it's me, I'm a great person, I can do this?
I certainly have worked with a number of men who really do not acknowledge to themselves that their behavior harms other people. They consider it joking. They would even say to themselves, I would never come on to a woman who wouldn't come on to me. You know, she has to make the first move. But oftentimes what they're not seeing is how all of the different things they do to set up the situation, they kind of do it unconsciously to see if that person might or might not respond to their trying to come on to them. And you know, they'll often pick the person who won't fight back or who won't get upset because they can sort of feel that out by putting their toe in the water. You know, maybe they put their arm on their person's shoulder or they say something slightly suggestive and they sit back and wait. The people who often don't complain about this are often the people who have issues themselves, and those are the people who will get violated. You know, sort of like it's not unusual for someone who's been raped to be raped more than once, and that often has to do with what they've learned to not see and not know, often because of how they grew up. Like, they walk into a dangerous situation and not see it as dangerous, where most of us would. And it goes the same way for perpetrators. Perpetrators can also set up perpetrating situations and not even consciously get what they're doing. So yes, there's grandiosity, and yes, there's I'm special, and I know, you know, I'm not going to hurt anybody because you look how many people voted me for me. That kind of grandiosity, I'm sure, is there. But there's also often an unconsciousness about how I've treated them. Let me try it differently. They truly don't get what they've done. They don't see it. I mean, that's part of our job, is to help them see what they don't see, because if they really got it, they wouldn't be able to do it.
Robert Weiss, good to talk with you. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise. We really appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be on your show, and love KPCC.
Thank you. Robert Weiss with us, clinical social worker, founding director of the Sexual Recovery Institute. It's Air Talk on 89.3 KPCC. Coming up, what a cluttered or clean desk says about your work habits and your creativity. Hedy Lynn-Herdes has the news.